Robert Kiyosaki, author of the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, will tell you why the rich people don't buy mutual funds and what they do to build great wealth.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I'm the author of a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is a true story based upon my two fathers, one my real dad, my biological dad, and the other one was my best friend's father. The poor dad was my real dad, who was a PhD in education, very smart man, graduated from university in less than 2 years, went to Stanford, University of Chicago, and was ultimately the head of education for the state of Hawaii. And the reason I call him my poor dad was simply because he was a high-paid government official. He made a lot of money, but no matter how much money he made, he was always broke by the 20th day into a 30-day month. So the reason I call him poor was that no matter how much money he made, he was still broke. My rich dad, on the other hand, was a man who didn't go to school. He dropped out of school at age 13 because his father died and he took over the family business. And so he ultimately became one of the wealthiest men in Hawaii. Most people don't know him because he was a very private individual. So starting from the age of 9, I was greatly influenced by both men. And the interesting thing was when it came to the subject of money, they both had very contradictory points of view on the subject of money. For instance, my poor dad always said our house is our greatest asset and it's our biggest investment. And my rich dad would say, man, if your house is not an asset, if you're financially illiterate, you'll understand it's not an asset. And if it's your biggest investment, you're in very big trouble. So for those who have not read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think it would be interesting for you to read. It's very simple. I learned to be a wealthy person starting from the age of 9, very simple diagrams and things like that. So what this tape is about the subject of investing. There is a difference between what the rich invest in versus the poor and the middle class. I'm going to tell you a story. I have a friend of mine here in Phoenix, Arizona, where I reside now, and he's a very bright young man. He's an attorney. He's making a lot of money. So he went to see his financial advisor, and his financial advisor advised him to, you know, buy mutual funds, diversify, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the problem with this young attorney was that his specialty is family law. And being in family law, what he spent occasionally, one of the not so good parts about his business or his profession is that he has to divorce the very wealthy or the very rich in town. And the reason he came to talk to me, he says, here's my financial advisor telling me to buy mutual funds and et cetera, et cetera. And he says, when I divorce a very rich family or a couple, they don't have mutual funds in it. So I asked him, so what do you find inside their portfolios of the very rich? He says, I find two things in general. I find businesses and I find real estate. I said, that's true. What the rich generally do is that, and the way they get rich is because they invest in businesses and real estate. And he says, so they don't buy mutual funds? I said, they may or may not, but it's not the way they get rich. In other words, you don't get rich by buying mutual funds. So what this tape is about is to clear up some of the differences between what the rich invest in and the poor middle class do. And rather than have me yak at you all day long, one of the secrets of my success as an investor and as a business owner is that I don't have to be that smart. I mean, a lot of people are afraid, you know, I didn't go to school or I didn't get good grades or I'm not that smart. Well, I'm not either. I didn't get good grades. But one of my secrets of success or the hot tip is to have work with people smarter than me. I'm very pleased today to have my advisors in this room with me because they can probably give much more detail about these subjects than I can. So one of them is Diane Kennedy, who is my strategic CPA. She's a member of Mensa, which means she's a genius. She has a master's in taxation, and so she's far beyond just a CPA. The other one is Kim Butler, who is a financial planner who guides me through the mazes of taxes and protection and et cetera, which the rich do. So I'm very happy to introduce my two advisors. And so, Diane, would you mind introducing yourself first, give a little bit of your background, and then Kim?
As Robert said, my name is Diane Kennedy, and I have offices both in Phoenix, Arizona, and Reno, Nevada. I specialize in business owners that have multi-corporations. We work together in putting together comprehensive tax planning for the high-income, high-wealth individuals. All of my clients, then, are wealthy individuals, business owners who invest in real estate and are interested in their future growth.
Thank you. And Kim?
Hello, I'm Kim Butler, and I am a certified financial planner. My background is banking. I was trained at a commercial bank and did a lot of commercial lending. And as I was going through that process, realized that the real wealth in our country is in the entrepreneurial fields and often connected with real estate as well. And as I delved into the financial planning arena and was trained through the insurance companies and the mutual funds, I began to see the differences in what the rich do versus what the poor do. And that's what we'll have some fun talking about today.
Good. So as a person who has made quite a bit of money as an investor, I'm often asked by people, they say, I have some extra money. What would you recommend I invest in? Or my broker said I should buy XYZ stock. What do I think? Or my friend recommended this mutual fund. Would you buy that? Or what are you investing in? And the problem with those questions, and oftentimes I appear vague and evasive, the reason is because for me, the subject of investing is not something I just say a yes or no to, or that's good or that's bad, because to me, investing requires to be a professional investor and to be wealthy as an investor requires a little bit more sophistication than just saying, you know, I buy the dips or I dollar cost average or I diversify or the PE is doing this or the Dow is doing that. That's not sophisticated. I mean, I need more information to do that. The points this tape will focus on are very simple. Number one point is what the rich focus on as investing as compared to the poor and middle class. And I'm not here to make the poor and middle class right or wrong or the rich right or wrong. I'm just doing my best to point out some distinctions or some differences between the three different groups. Number two, there's this fallacy out there that people think investing is risky. Investing by itself is not risky. Speculation is, which is saying that I think the price of the stock's going to go up or the stock's going to go down, I'm going to short it. That's speculation. What my rich dad taught me about investing is not about risk. Investing is about fundamentally doing the right thing so that there's a guaranteed result at the other end. As in the movie Wall Street, I'm not recommending this guy, but as Gordon Gekko, nefarious character in the movie, said, he says, I don't throw darts when I pick a stock. He says, I bet on sure things. And that's what the rich do. And he did it illegal. I'm not recommending that. But I only bet on sure things. So that I'm saying that investing is not risky. And number three, the biggest message I want to say out there is that you don't have to be that smart. It's fairly easy, and it's just fundamental. And the reason I don't have to be smart is because I surround myself with smart people. One of the biggest mistakes I think people make is they think they have to know all the answers. Ladies and gentlemen, we're living in the information age, and information is doubling every year now. It is impossible for anybody to have all the answers. And so one of your greatest assets an individual can have is high-qualified friends and very, you know, friends in smart places, not necessarily high places, who can advise you. So going over really quickly, this tape is about what the rich invest in versus the poor middle class. That is not supposed to be risky. Speculation is risky, but not investing. And number three is relatively easy. And what we're going to give you in this short tape is just a big picture on the whole subject. The other part about it is this, as a disclaimer, there are many ways to get rich. We're just going to share one way. If you're making $20 million a year as a movie star, you don't need this tape. If you want to find out how to get rich as an investor, we have some ideas for you. Number two, this is an educational tape. This is not an advisory tape. In other words, we strongly advise people, as I'm already saying, to get strong, competent financial advice as possible because everybody's situation is different. So this is educational, not advisory. Don't go out and say, I told you to buy real estate or build business. I'm not telling anybody anything. I'm just giving you some education on the subject. And number three, this tape will work regardless of which country you live in. I oftentimes hear people say, oh, that's for the U.S. only, or that works in the U.S. And what they do at that point is they discount what I'm trying to say. For those that know me, they know I travel throughout the world. And while some of the laws may be different in their details, ultimately, as I travel the world, I find out the rich operate very similar in the same way, which this tape will cover. So for those of you who operate who live outside the U.S., please know the laws may be different, but the principles remain the same. When it comes to advisors, I want to say this much, the same thing. There's advisors for the rich, there's advisors for the poor, and there's advisors for the middle class. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I think it's so important that people ask the specialty of the advisor prior to doing any other kind of discussion. I mean, Diane, if somebody came to you and told you about their situation and then said what your specialty is, Don't you think that's a little backwards?
Absolutely, Kim. In fact, I've had clients call me and say, I have $50,000 and I want to get rich. That was an actual phone call. That's pretty hard to advise someone when they have a very vague idea. I think the fundamental thing is, first, a person has to know what direction they are going, what is right for them. They have to understand their own situation and then decide what kind of an advisor they need. We talk a lot about what is the right investment for a person, but really only a person is going to know what the right investment is for them.
It's the idea of having the long-term goal or perspective or vision in place first, and then asking or seeking out the advisor that's going to have the specialty that will take you on the road to get there.
So what we're going into right away is actually, is a lot of people focus on the product versus the strategy. And what we're going to say to you right now is that to be successful is not whether it's a mutual fund or a bond or a stock or real estate or whatever, or Beanie Babies or Barbie dolls. It's the strategy. And what most people focus on is the product. You know, should I buy a mutual fund? Versus, well, what's your strategy? And the thing that we were talking about here is this, and it's one of my personal bugaboos, and Kim Butler said it very accurately the other day. She says, most people are planning to be poor. Would you say that's true?
Yes, I do. When you take a look at the strategies that people are using, and I'll reemphasize that part, it is a goal to be poor. And is planning to be poor what you want to be doing?
And people are doing it unconsciously, and they don't even know they're doing it. And I'll give you an example. When somebody says, I have a superannuation or a 401k or an IRA and all this, and I'm putting money, a 401k, they're actually saving money. They're not really investing. And they'll often say this line. They say, I can pull it out when my income is lower. In other words, that's a very middle-class ideal, is that, you know, let's say retire at 65. When I'm 65, I'm going to be poor. That's what they're saying. So my income will be lower at 65. So they're unconsciously, subliminally programming to be poor. The rich have a different problem. By the time they're 65, they have too much money, and they have so much income that this little puny 401k or superannuation or Central Provident Fund in Singapore and all this, it's a problem because they can't pull that money out tax-free. And so what most people are doing via the advisors, you know, the magazines, the television shows and all this, most of the advisors are catering strictly to the middle class and the upper middle class wage earner employee types. But the rich cannot think that way. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. When you take a look at the strategies that are written about in the magazines, that are talked about on the newspapers.
And on the radio.
You're right. Everywhere. You have to go to the author of that article and consider the source. And oftentimes, you have to ask yourself, is someone that's making 40 grand living in New York City even
writing
investing?
Writing for a newspaper.
Right. Even investing money themselves. And it's just like we talked about earlier, the long-term vision of what you want to have happen is where you need to keep your focus and not be taking advice from people that may have a different vision. In fact, one that you don't even know about because you don't know the person. In addition, when you think about the strategies that are most often suggested, you have to take a look at the strategy, not the product. And just like the rich do things differently in their lives that we see, they're doing things differently in their lives that we don't see. In their financial life, they buy insurance differently. They buy mutual funds differently. It's not the product. It's the strategy that they use behind it.
And for me, I see the tax planning is so much different. For example, in the United States, one of the divisions this year has stated that within 5 years, 10 million Americans won't be filing tax returns anymore. They're going to automatically assess taxes, such as we see in European countries. That's very significant for evidence of what's happening in our technological age.
I want to say something about taxes. Is most people think of taxes as only income tax. In other words, you know, they say we work until July for the government. Well, it's actually worse than that, because the real reality on taxes is we're taxed when we earn, we're taxed when we spend, we tax when we saved, we tax when we invest, we tax when we lose money, we're taxed when we win money, and we're also taxed when we die. So taxes for most people are the number one expense. So part of the strategy, and this is where Kim comes in, and one of the things my rich dad taught me was the importance of insurance, because insurance is a way of minimizing or sheltering ourselves or protecting ourselves from the ravages of the government. For those who listened to my first tape with Diane Kennedy, in America, if you're an employee or you're self-employed, it's very tough to protect yourself from the government because the government is taking their money before you even get paid. Is that correct, Diane?
Absolutely. We talked also about the newly self-employed person. A lot of people think, I can get out of this by quitting my job and starting my own business.
Yeah, home-based business, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, and they're really self-employed.
Absolutely. What they've done is they've bought themselves a job or created a job for themselves. They just work for somebody different themselves.
And that's largely because of the structure that they've set up, right? The lack of a corporation,
plus a plan and plus a vision and plus knowing the difference between a small business owner and a guy like Bill Gates.
Right.
And what most people become are self-employed small business owners. And I mean this with great respect. I feel sorry for them because it is the hardest position to operate out of. If you're successful, you have to be S. You know, self-employed also stands for super person because for my first year in my own business, I spent 3 days out of the five fending off the government in so many rules and regulations. And that's what happens to a person that says, since there's no job security, I'm going to start my own business. And they go from employee to self-employed. That's why I wrote this book, Cash Flow Quadrant, which is the book right after Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's part two of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's about the difference between a self-employed person and a business owner. And there's very big differences mentally, emotionally, and psychologically. So what we're saying here is that first of all, is your strategy as to what do you want to become as your years go on. And unfortunately, most people in the middle class are already subconsciously programming themselves to be poor at age 65. We're quite shocked at thinking about, you know, most people, they have kids. Let's say they have four children, and they struggle financially to have
private schools
and the new house and the cars and the soccer and et cetera, et cetera. And they say, oh, life will be good when the kids are finally out of school. And so finally, 30 years later, all the kids are out of school. And what's happening, you're saying, for many people in America today, they have four new kids moving in. And it could be their mom and dad on the wife's side and mom and dad on the husband's side. And so that's what's happening. Is that true?
It's very true. I see it in my client base a lot. It's called reverse parenting. Your parents come in to live with you, and that vision is missing, that dream, that goal of where you want to be.
Right.
But isn't it true that most of the people have been set up for that? They've been told, get a job, or I'll start your own job, and buy a big house, and invest in a pension fund.
Buy mutual funds.
Exactly. And they're not building assets that are going to create other income streams.
And shelter from taxes.
Exactly.
Right.
So they're paying a large tax load. A self-employed person pays the highest percentage in taxes because they're paying additional taxes. But the key is that they have set up a plan to be poor.
Right.
Just like their parents did. So they all get to live together.
Which brings up a point is, let's say we go forward to the year 2010. How optimistic are you that there will be such things as Social Security and Medicare, and in the countries throughout the world where I go to, can the government afford to take care of the millions and millions of people who are planning to be poor?
I think the issue of any kind of structured deal, and that's what it's looked at, is a government deal, is about the worst thing that you can rely on because it has...
That's planning to be poor.
That's right.
Really
it
poor.
Has an entitlement attitude of, well, someone else is going to take care of me.
Looking internationally at the demographics, I'm a numbers person. I love to look at these. The baby boomer generation is international. All countries have experienced that. And as this group moves up and gets older, that means there's less people to pay for them. It's the numbers don't work.
Yeah, today, it's for every retiree, there's three people paying for them. And in a few years, it's going to be a one-to-one ratio.
Right.
So not only will you be supporting your mom and dad, you'll be supporting everybody else's moms and dads out there. And that's what we say. If your intention is your company or the government's going to take care of you, that's really planning to be poor. And what most of the middle class are planning to do is they plan to be on lower income status at age 65. So what this audio tape is about, and I'm not making either one right or wrong because it's a free country. You can make your choices on it. I already made my choice how to plan or how to come up with a strategy to be rich. And that's what this tape is about. And so, Diane, also there's a fallacy in the what I call the middle class dream is get a safe, secure job, buy a big house, and then, you know, invest in mutual funds. And that's okay for most people, but there is a hidden flaw in that thinking. in the tax code. Isn't that correct? Because you make more money, you buy a bigger house, and everybody says, well, I get a tax write-off for a bigger house. There's a flaw in that thinking. Isn't that correct?
That's a predominant thinking in the U.S. because we have a home mortgage deduction. And as people make more and more money, they then think, I need to buy a bigger and bigger house.
So they get further in debt.
Exactly. But the tax code has a phase out of the mortgage interest deduction as your income gets above a certain point. That is a huge shock. I've seen many clients every year suddenly, well, I have write-off of $25,000 in interest, but you didn't get to take any of it. So that is a true expense with no tax benefit then.
So you're saying if you make a lot of money and you buy a big house, there comes a point when you pass this threshold, you're making so much money, the government says you're no longer allowed to deduct the interest on your house?
That's absolutely correct.
So
it makes the house become just like all of the paper assets that our current environment suggests that we have. And you really have to look at your asset base and determine whether it's a true asset. In other words, does it put money in your pocket, or is it really more of an expense?
Kim has got an excellent point. A fundamental issue is, what is the definition of what an asset is? What is the definition of a liability? And as a CPA, I see that there's incredible value to being able to read accurately your numbers. What does your financial statement really look like? Not what your financial planner puts together who's an outside party and doesn't understand you, but do you intuitively understand where you are?
Your own financial position.
Exactly. And where do you want to go?
And that's what I covered in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was my poor dad, the school teacher, said word literacy was everything. And what my rich dad, he said, don't listen to your best friend's father because he's illiterate. But my poor dad was financially literate. I mean, he could read numbers. And I've said this many times, that people that can read numbers have more power over those who can only read words. Because being financially illiterate in this world, you oftentimes need to take advice from what Kim was talking about, some writer for some newspaper who's making $40,000 a year giving you financial advice.
Well, actually, the numbers do tell a story. That's where the literacy comes in, is when looking at a financial statement. Can you tell what that story is?
It is a story of hope, or is it a story of tragedy? You know, he worked really hard and he died broke. Or he started off slow and he became a mega billionaire, you know, and the numbers will tell you that story. So the second part of this tape, we're getting into what the rich think about that the poor and middle class do not. And most importantly, I think Kim said it most accurately, is that what the rich think about is a strategy, not the product. And that was my rich dad. He very, very simple strategy for me personally. Since the age of 9, I knew these simple steps. Now, if you don't understand it, don't worry, because like I said, I hire or work with smart people. I don't have to be that smart. I just have to know where I'm going. So the strategy was very simple. I have to build businesses. That was my strategy. I buy real estate. And what the poor and middle class buy, so real estate is a tangible asset, and what the poor and middle class buy are paper assets. So that's why they feel so insecure subconsciously, because most of their assets are paper and their job is tenuous. And as self-employed, you have to work very hard, and the government, everybody's after you in that place. So the difference between rich and poor is a strategy was to buy real estate because it's a tangible asset. Number three was to hire the best advisors possible. Number four was to protect yourself with insurance. That was vitally important all the time for my rich dad, was that the product of insurance to cover us. And also understand step five was to understand corporate entities, i.e. an S corp, difference between an S corporation, a C corporation, a limited partnership, and a limited liability, an LLC corporation. And again, if that's overwhelming for some of you, please don't worry, simply because it's stuff I don't understand either. I just knew I had to do them if I was going to start thinking not like a middle class or a poor person, but to think like a rich person. And so those are the five simple steps. When I was a young boy, my rich dad told me this story. And the story went like this. He says, this is the difference between an investor and everybody else, or a business owner and everybody else. He says, there was this village. And I was 9 years old when he told me this story. There was this lake. And he said the village needed water. So they put it out to contractual bid, who could bring water from this lake a mile away to the village. And these two gentlemen bid for it, and both got the contract. So gentleman A, what he went out to do, because it was quick and it was easy and it was fast and it didn't cost much money, was he bought two buckets. And so he's running back and forth through the village from morning to night. This is an employee or a self-employed type of person, lugging these two buckets back and forth through the village. Person B is thinking more like a business owner and investor. And what person B does then instead is he goes out, hires an architect, gets an engineering firm, hires investors, goes to the stock market and all this. And instead of hauling buckets, what he does is he puts in a pipeline. And so what my rich dad said to me, he says, if you want to be rich, you build pipelines, you don't haul buckets. And so what's happening for most people is every day they have less and less time, they're working harder, they're making money, the government's taking it, and they're not building pipelines. What I'm going to be talking to you, the strategy I had was to build pipelines. And after I built one pipeline, then I go and build another pipeline, and then I build another pipeline. So I may have started off slower than the – I may have made less money than the person who was an employee or self-employed, which I cover in Cash Flow Quadrant quite a bit in my next book. They're going back and forth making more money, but that's actually short-term. And they're planning to be poor at age 65 because they could be less income because they're going to stop hauling those buckets. And what the rich are doing instead is the strategy is to keep building pipelines. So at age 65, it's just more and more money is pouring in on them. And then what they need is an insurance or protection. And the protection is provided on the pipeline because there's people who want to stick holes in it and take some of the profit, should we say. And the number one sticker of holes in the thing is the government. And number two are other people, you know, people who sue you, et cetera, or you make your own mistakes and you lose money. So the way the pipeline is covered is via insurance or via corporations. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. When you talked about the various strategies, you know, so often people have a very junk drawer approach to their financial situation.
That's correct, yeah.
And, you know, the kitchen junk drawer, you buy a hammer, you throw it in there, you buy a mutual fund and throw it in there. There's no difference.
You got a hot tip. Somebody says, oh, you should buy 10 shares of this high-tech company. So you buy 10 shares and you drop in the junk drawer.
Absolutely. And just like this person with the buckets, you know, that is a junk drawer approach. It's a piecemeal, unholistic picture of trying to get a job done quickly without having that long-term vision in mind.
They're taking shortcuts.
Exactly. And again, I think that really goes back to what you want to have happen. So if you have a strategy in place,
which is building a pipeline.
Correct. And, you know, in fact, let's pause there and go back to ways that people can build pipelines early on. I mean, there's so many opportunities in variety of different networking things that they could be doing or an insurance career where
Oh, that's a good point. That's what I'm gonna bring up. The moment you start thinking strategically versus product, versus whether it's a mutual fund or real estate, the moment you start thinking strategically in a pipeline, there's more than just real estate, bonds, and mutual funds to build that pipeline. One of the things we recommend in building a business is network marketing. Network marketing is a way of owning, it's an information age type franchise, where that you work really hard, but if you work really hard today, it pays for years and years and years. The same thing as an insurance career, is that correct?
That's correct. And that will build a pipeline. And then furthermore, you can use strategies like insurance to protect that pipeline because the protection component has to be in place as you continue to build your wealth.
Which is what I'm saying real quickly. As I always say, there's only two kinds of money problems. Problem number one is you don't have any money. And problem number two, which is another problem, you have too much money. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
And both types of problems require different kinds of advice and different kinds of insurance. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
They have different strategies entirely for those two different instances. Also, on your idea of either the insurance career or the network marketing, multi-level marketing, I have a friend who's a general agent, and he was telling me the story of how hard it is to recruit people into insurance because they usually end up having to work really hard for the first couple of years, and they're dealing with kids right out of college who, gee, they can go to work for the bank at $30,000 or $40,000, and why would they go work at this insurance agency and maybe make $20,000 the first year, not realizing that after they've done it for 10 years, they've got $100,000, $150,000 coming through the pipeline without
whether
even
work
working.
Or not. Yeah,
that's right.
So the question is, for all of us at any age, do we want to just keep carrying buckets or do we want to start building a pipeline which has an investment in the beginning, but just like interest compounds, that work will compound and give us great rewards?
I was thinking long-term versus short-term. And what I find with most people is they want job security or they want to make a quick buck. You know, I can make a lot of money by being a consultant or I should start my own little business. And they want money right away because they've got bills to pay. I don't blame them. A business owner and investor must think long term. So what we're saying here is this. My rich dad said two things. You build businesses, and that could be network marketing. I don't recommend anybody start. I've been trained most of my life to start companies. And I wouldn't recommend it to my worst enemy because it's a lot of work to build something like Bill Gates did or Michael Dell or Branson out of England. That's hard work. But today it's very possible for people to build their own businesses, either via the insurance industry, because you're building up residual or passive income. And I think that's a big subject for accounting. Isn't that correct? Passive income versus direct income?
Absolutely. The earned income, which is what a self-employed person does, is the highest taxed. You have to pay a self-employment tax. And passive, you don't have that.
And that's a big difference. I don't pick this up here. I don't make it too complicated. There's income that you're taxed on, income you're not taxed on. And what the poor and middle class do, they say, I'm a good, hardworking man or I'm a good, hardworking person. The trouble with being good and hardworking is that the government takes the largest share of taxes from people who are hardworking. People who are generating income, either passively or residually, pay less in taxes, oftentimes get tax breaks. So this is all part of the strategy. So if I could review it again really quickly, you build businesses that have residual or passive income in it. And that's why, as far as investing goes, that's an investment strategy because you're thinking a reward for long-term, you know, delayed gratification versus short-term gratification.
And don't you think that not only does sometimes the investment have to be in dollars, but also in time?
Well, you know, there's only two things you can invest, time or money. And most people say, well, I don't have any money. I said, well, then invest the time. And that's why I recommend, you know, if you're going to build your own company, good luck. But network marketing is good. There's good companies and bad companies out there. But if the company is proven and successful, then it's not the system that's going to fail. It's just you that's going to. You just work the system, and it'll pay buckets of water day in, day out through the pipeline, while your friends who took the high-paying job are hauling buckets. You go out and build the second pipeline, the third pipeline. And when you're 65, you got a big problem called too much money. But then you call Kim Butler in and say, I need insurance to cover too much money now. Is that true?
That's right.
And so most people are hauling buckets and they plan to stop working and become poor at age 65, clinging to their mutual funds, which are paper assets. And the problem I have with mutual funds is this is taxes. I don't know if most people realize this, is that the difference between real estate and mutual funds is in mutual funds, you can make no money and get taxed. In other words, you make no money and you have to pay money in taxes. That's the problem I have with mutual funds, plus they're paper assets. Mutual funds as an investment vehicle. I'm going to tell you a story of a vehicle. Investments are just vehicles. For instance, I want to go from L.A. to New York. Well, you can walk. You can take the bus. You can ride the bicycle and take the train. You can take a truck. You can hitchhike. You can take the shuttle or you can take the jetliner. Which one's up to you? To me, a mutual fund is like riding a bus. It is slow. It, you know, some people make a lot of money, and granted, but for the average person, they don't get there fast enough with it. On top of that, you're taxed. What's the thing about taxes on mutual funds?
Well, the biggest part with mutual funds is the traditional way of just owning them. I go invest in ABC fund. I have no control over how the investment goes or when I get taxed. Whereas with real estate, for just as an example in the United States, if I have a building that's appreciated $500,000, I can do a like-kind exchange and defer the tax. I can choose when or if I'm going to pay tax on that.
Right. Well, most people say, I bought a stock and the price went up. Well, in real estate, it says the price went up also. The difference between a stock going up or a mutual fund going up and real estate going up is a stock and mutual fund, you're taxed on it. With real estate, I can take all those gains, as they're called, and not pay any tax on it. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right.
So that's how I get rich quicker.
And what else do you have from real estate that you do not have from mutual funds?
I have something passive losses.
And cash flow?
And cash flow. I mean, the reason I don't have to work is because one of my pipelines is my real estate investment corporation, which is in a C corporation. All the property is held in limited partnership. Now, if you don't understand that, don't worry, because that's where you hire a smart person to tell you how to do all this. I have all this income coming in. On top of that, it's a lot of it's tax-free because I'm depreciating my property. The government says, the reason I know this, why the rich do this way, because the government is rewarding you for going this way. It punishes you for going stocks and mutual funds, and it rewards you for going to real estate and to owning your own businesses. So you got to look, why do the rich go that way? Because the government wants you to go that way. Is that true?
It's actually amazing when you think about it. With a mutual fund held the traditional way, you have a paper asset that you have no control over.
Subject to market forces.
Exactly, that are totally out of your control, that you have to pay tax that you might not have any cash for.
Right.
As opposed to a business, which because you designed the pipeline, you have a lot of control, You have managed the risk by having good advisors with good insurance in place and took good tax planning in place. Again, you're controlling the pipeline, which could include real estate or your businesses.
Right. And what Diane and I were just working on this, I don't have one corporation. I have multiple corporations. I do it legally, you know, as a way of doing it, which you hire good advice for. What she's talking about, if I make too much money in one corporation, I just don't pay the taxes the way the, you know, employee, the government takes it before you get it, and self-employed, the government takes it before you get it also. I can move my income from one corporation to the other and offset it against paper losses.
Please turn to side B of this tape.
There's real losses and there's paper losses. And real estate allows you to take paper losses. The stock market, when people say, I took a loss, that's real loss. I mean, money actually came out of your pocket. With real estate, I can take a paper loss, which no money came in my pocket. In fact, money actually came into my pocket, and they give me a tax break upon it also. Is that correct?
That's true. And as you're talking about all this, I'm sure we've got people listening that then want to run, ask somebody about it, and they're going to hear, oh, you can't do that. It's illegal.
And that's where the advisors come in, right, Kim?
Absolutely. It goes back to asking the specialty of the advisor. And you've got to get someone that knows what they're doing in that arena. And those questions need to be asked up front. And I would even go so far as to ask to see what that own advisor is doing.
And that's one of the five steps my rich dad told me, is the reason you want to have good advice is because most people will tell you you can't do it. And the reason they can't do it is because they don't know how to do it. They've never heard about it before. They don't make enough money to do it. And they're planning to be poor anyway. Growing up in a family of intellectuals, all PhDs and all this, it made me crazy, because just because you have a PhD in ant entomology doesn't mean you know anything about the stock market or taxes or corporate law or mutual funds or real estate or businesses. And a lot of times, because you have a good high school or college degree, doesn't mean you know anything about the strategies of how the rich get rich. And I'll say it again, because it's worth saying. They build businesses. They buy real estate because real estate offers capital appreciation tax-free and losses, and also losses tax gives you tax advantages. They shelter with corporate entities, not personally. The poor always want to own everything. The rich control everything via corporations. They have good advisors, and they use insurance as well as corporations as a way of sheltering when they don't have money and when they have money. That's the strategy. You can do it any way underneath of that. But that's the strategy of the rich. They build pipelines. They build one. It may take them 30 years to build the first one. It may take 7 years to build the second one. It may take 4 years to build the next one. By the time they're 40, they can put a pipeline in every other year. And that's why the rich get richer and the poor haul water buckets. One more thing I want to say about real estate, that was my strategy since I was a kid. I knew only two things: build businesses, buy real estate. It's not that hard. But when somebody says, you know, stocks are much better, well, stocks are a vehicle, especially for capital appreciation or capital gains really quickly. I agree with that. The problem with stocks I had was that since I didn't have much money, if I went to Bank of America, let's say, and I wanted to buy $100,000 in stocks, would Bank of America loan me the $100,000 on stocks? The answer is no, because it's a paper asset. But if I say I want to buy a $100,000 house, the bank smiles, brings out a loan application. In other words, I could leverage my money much faster through real estate. So I would put, let's say I put $10,000 down in a stock and it went up 10%. That means I made $1,000 and I paid taxes and all the other stuff on it. But if I put $10,000 down on a $100,000 piece of real estate and it went up 10%, I got 100% gain, because $100,000, 10% is $10,000. Not only that, I got to write off most of those. I got to depreciate my property as well as take those capital gains tax deferred. Now, I never do anything for the tax reasons, but this is part of my strategy. In other words, what makes me upset is I see people taking losses. For instance, in Australia, it's called negative gearing. And it's a good strategy, but it's a strategy actually if you have a lot of money. It's not a good strategy if you don't have a lot of money to take a real loss. There's real losses and fake losses. To take a real loss for the tax advantage is really insane.
Well, the numbers don't work. Again, coming back to numbers, because I'm a numbers person, but let's say you're even in a 50% tax bracket by the time you add up everything. why spend a dollar to get 50 cents in savings? That doesn't make any sense. I think you should just prepay your accountant.
That's right. I'd rather hire it, but most of the average person who's an employee really does not need an accountant. Is that true?
Oh, that's absolutely true. In fact, we talked about how in the U.S., within the next 5 years, the government's going to do your tax form for you because they have all the information on employees anyway.
Right. So the point that Diane brought up, which I like also, is that the issue of control. The problem with paper assets is that your control is in the market. I mean, you're out of control. Who can tell what the market's going to up and go down? If the moment you say, I think the market's going to go up, you're speculating because you don't know. With real estate, I have more control. And what makes real estate risky for most people is the issue of debt. But I can control the level of debt. You know, when somebody says, I can buy it for zero down, well, that's good if you got a real steal of a deal and it makes a lot of sense. Anybody can get a zero down or no money down type of deal and pay too much for it, which is not the good way. So there's no real answer. I've always said life is not a multiple test. It's a multiple guess. You know, you're always guessing. But the reason I like real estate, although it's slower, which is good for my personality because I'm slow, is that I'm in more control of it. I can also, by using it to shelter my income, I can move my income around, whereas an employee and a self-employee cannot do that. I can shelter my income. I can move it around. I control the amount of debt. It's not dependent upon necessarily market forces, whether price is going to go up and price is going down. It's just dependent upon rent. How much can I rent this thing for? If the toilet breaks, that's an expense. So I factor in expenses on it. I control that. I control vacancy factors. That's all part of financial literacy or understanding numbers. But that's very easy to do. People say, well, I don't want to fix toilets. Well, I don't fix toilets either. I have a management company to do all that. I don't do any of that. I just take the advantages. I take the money. I take the tax-free capital gains, I take the losses, and I shelter my business income against my real estate. That's part of an overall strategy. I have Kim to help me with a structure now. That in this stage of my life, I have so many pipelines coming in. I got another problem called too much money, whereas a few years ago I didn't have enough money because I was building, all my money was going into building this pipeline. And now that the pipelines are coming in, all of a sudden I shift from a problem of not enough money to a new problem called too much money, which is one insurance problem when you have not enough, and you have another insurance problem when it's too much. And now Diane is, I see her more and more often because the problem is I have too much money. Is that correct?
That's true. I also like the point when you were talking about buying and leveraging. One of the things that I see as people move up in their assets and they start taking on more and more debt and more income, they sometimes don't have a strong enough financial foundation, and they don't have the literacy to handle, the financial literacy to be able to handle that, and that's when the system collapses. That's when we see the...
It's called making a mistake.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, and we've all done that, and that's why you need insurance to not to protect you from somebody else. You also need insurance to protect you from yourself. Is that correct, Kim?
Yes, and I think when you take a look at all of the other strategies aside from real estate, you have a financial institution that's involved. And you have to think behind, again, just like looking at the author of an article.
You're talking about the financial, be it the bank or
right,
the mutual fund company
or
the stock company or the brokerage firm or whatever. You have somebody with a vested interest in it. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And guess what? Those companies are in business to make a profit. And so you have to look at their agenda.
And the rich don't do that.
That's right. They're in control, not the financial institutions.
And that's when people say, I'm putting money aside for the long term. You're playing right into a financial institution like a mutual fund or a pension fund. Is that correct?
That's right. And letting them make money and build their storehouses instead of you building yours.
Right. You always say it, you say it's called the velocity of money. And what the poor middle class do is they park their money. There's no velocity on it. It just sits there. And they wonder why they're struggling, why they're rich. I'm constantly, my first question is, if I invest in something, my question is how soon I get my money back.
Right.
Because I want to invest in something else. I don't put it in there for the long term. So when I acquire a piece of real estate, let's say the price, you know, let's say I buy it at $100,000, goes to $200,000. If the fundamentals support it, I might just borrow out that money tax-free because I got my money back. In fact, probably 10 times more of it, and I'm buying 10 more properties. That's called velocity. Whereas with the people who are saying, yes, I'm in the long term, I'm investing in my retirement plan, there's no velocity. That's called parking it.
Well, you know, and we go back to our first point we made is, what is the long-term strategy? If you're planning to be poor, then follow the advice you're seeing in all the magazines and the newspapers. However, if you want to be wealthy, you're going to have to step outside of the mainstream in some of your thinking and your advisors that you have.
Good. I know this may sound overwhelming for some of you who may have never heard some of these things before, but I just want to give you a ray of hope and tell you a little bit of how to get started. For me personally, I think Diane will back this up and Kim will back this up. The hardest part for somebody, you know, in school, since you only learn to read words, the hardest part is financial literacy. When I was a little boy, my rich dad, not my poor dad, my poor dad had me read books, which was good, but my rich dad had me read financial statements. And he had me do financial, I sit there and write them out, do it. And he'd say, what are your numbers? What are your numbers telling you? And I hated it. I just absolutely hated it because I was not good at it. And he had me analyze investments, analyze his real estate, analyze his company, analyze a stock offering, analyze this. And that was the hard part. When people say they invest blindly, that is true. The reason they invest blindly is the numbers let your eyes see what your eyes cannot see. And so that's true. So if you want to increase your vision, you have to have financial literacy, the ability to see. So that's my rich dad pounded into me. The reason that's good news is that I've created this game called Cash Flow. And the reason I created it as a game is because numbers don't ever stand still. Is that correct? Numbers are always moving.
Well, you know, that's also, I know that with Kim, she's talked about a traditional personal financial plan where somebody has it. It's this incredible document with lots of colored graphs, and it has a picture of that moment, and 5 minutes later it's outdated.
It's different, yeah.
Right.
And the reason I created Cash Flow is number one was to teach you accounting. You know, I charge $195 U.S. for that game. It comes with three audio tapes and a videotape and all this. And, well, that's a lot of money. So, well, obviously you haven't been to business school because the hardest subject for me ever in my whole life was accounting. The reason it was hard because I was sound asleep in the class all the time. It was difficult. So I created Cash Flow as a game, and people say, well, it's for my kids. No, I created it for adults to teach their kids. The kids don't have the problem. The adults have it. And if it's a game, what's happening is dynamic. The numbers is moving. It's changing. And nothing goes the way you want or expect it anyway. The market is always changing. So what I do with Cash Flow is teach accounting. And wouldn't you say, Diane, that's the hardest part for people is they don't understand their own personal numbers?
Well, I think they have total blinders. They don't want to see what the numbers are telling them, and instead they want to fool themselves. They want to think that the house is an asset, that the big screen TV is an asset.
The vacation home and the car and the second BMW.
Right. Those are all assets, quote unquote.
Because their banker and the real estate agent and the BMW salesman told them they're assets.
And whose assets are they? The bankers and the real estate agents and the BMW company.
Right. When the banker says your house is an asset, they're not really lying to you. They're just not telling you whose asset it is. The word mortgage comes from the French word mortier, which means death. Mortier is death. Gage means an engagement. So mortgage means an engagement until death. And that's what Kim was saying, is what the financial institutions want you to do is they want to get your money, and then they want to get it on a regular basis. And that's what a mortgage does. It's their way of putting their vacuum cleaner into your pocket. Mm-hmm. That's what happens to the poor middle class, too, who are not financially literate. Would you agree with that, Diane?
Well, yeah. In fact, actually what they've done is they've built a pipeline. It's just that you're the one who's shoveling the buckets of water to fill the other side of it.
Yeah, there really is. Most people are attached to the pipeline. It's at the wrong end of it, unfortunately. It's like the cell phone company. They'll give you the phone, but they want that monthly payment from you. Same as insurance. They want you to make that monthly payment. Nothing right or wrong with it. But the reason the poor middle class struggle so much is that they're at one end of it versus the other end of it.
Well, the other part is that they are looking at just the product instead of taking a look at overall strategy.
Right. So we created Cash Flow so that you could look at the strategy. You learn a very tough subject called personal finances, income statements and balance sheets, and have fun while you're doing it, simultaneously analyzing a deal. So Cash Flow, so the good news is this, we made it easy. I think I made the toughest part easy because we made it a game, we made it fun to learn, it's repetition. You know, it's $195, but try to go to business school, it's thousands of dollars. You know, to spend hours analyzing deals at my rich dad, that's thousands of hours in time, and I consolidate it into one game. For less than the price of a used TV set, you can have this game, and repetition is the way we learn. The more you play it, the smarter you get, because every single time the situations are different. You're taught to analyze, number one, your personal financial situation. Secondarily, you then analyze the investments. Does this investment fit, number three, my overall strategy? So the good news is that we've made the investment part easy. So you can analyze your personal investment and then analyze your strategy. So the good news is, for the first time, it is easier and easier for people to become wealthy the way the rich do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. The other thing that I've played this game dozens and dozens of times, and you draw different cards, so you step into different roles, and it gives you the opportunity to learn how investments that might work for you don't work for the other guy. And that's the way it is in real life. And so you're in a safe environment learning what can work in different situations.
Yes. Plus, my investments today, what I invested in 2 years ago will not work for me today. Would you agree with that, Kim?
Right. It's the strategy that matters and the timing of it. And what a better environment to learn that than in a game.
That's right. And it's you have a little fun because there's a little competition. It's more ego than anything else because you don't want to lose. You recommend it to your clients. Why do you recommend it?
Because of the ability to learn and to be faced with the issues at hand. Diane mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of people they're purposely blinding themselves, where when you can step out of your own environment, play a game, have some fun with it, it teaches you a lot about life and also about investing and reading those numbers and understanding the strategy that you should be implementing.
Thank you. And as an accountant, don't you see that's what hurts most people, is they're not clear on their numbers?
Oh, absolutely. They, first of all, don't understand their own numbers because the banker has told them the big screen TV and the second beamer are all assets. And so
they have a big net worth,
right?
Which I think very funny.
Yeah. And jewelry and all of these things that really aren't
Golf
giving
clubs.
Them anything. Armani ties. We can go on and on.
But they all come to your net worth.
Right, right. And they aren't giving us any income. Then how on earth, with having an inaccurate picture of where you are to start, how can we really expect anyone to make good investment decisions when they really don't know what they want anyway?
They're blind. They're investing blindly.
Right.
And it also forces you to have a long-term perspective and maybe forgo some of the short-term goodies that you might get to get the win in the long run.
Right. And if we could talk about really quickly how insurance works, you know, because all part of this is, as you're building this, you need insurance when you have no money.
Right.
And then you need insurance when you have a lot of money. So at this point, I want to say it's really quite easy. The hardest part is handled by cash flow and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And for a few dollars, you can learn as repetition. And then you have to start. And you can start that. And it's not that hard. You start buying and selling of this. But what kind of insurance do you have when you're starting versus when you're rich? Can you tell us in a nutshell what it would be?
Yeah, I think so. Because just as in all things, there are strategies for the poor and strategies for the rich. And when you're at the poor level, and many, many wealthy people start out at this level. And
I was very poor.
So was I. There's no, you know, nothing bad about it. You have the opportunity there just to protect possibly your income. And so literally you buy insurance to do that. You buy disability insurance, life insurance in that manner. And then as you begin to grow and your asset base increases and your capability for not only earned but unearned income increases, you have to switch strategies. It's not the product. It's the strategy that you use. And so you switch into environments that, and permanent insurance is one of them, that give you tax benefits, that protect your assets, protect your pipeline, and really close up those holes that the government is trying to poke in.
Right. I think one of the saddest things that happens to people is, you know, they believe in owning everything, but the rich don't. Rich control. But what happens is they work all their lives owning all this, and when they die, the government takes it. Is that correct?
That's right. And insurance can play a role there as well, because if you really hate insurance companies, well, then let the insurance money go to the government, and you keep yours for your family.
That's what the rich do. They control their wealth even after death. They do it via trust, insurance. And right now I'm talking to Diane because I have several pipelines in place. The money's starting to pour in. It's another kind of problem. And that's what you're talking about. So it's called split dollar life insurance and except, you know.
I work quite a bit with Kim with some of my high wealth clients that are running into the same problem that you are too. Nice problem, but you still have strategies you need to put in place. It's interesting, though. I think there's more misinformation about insurance in the media than any other subject. One of the things that I'm always hearing is you buy term life insurance and invest the difference in mutual funds. That is a strategy for the poor and middle class.
That's right.
It does not work for high income, high wealth people who want to shelter that.
And again, go back to the sources. Where are the authors that are writing the articles that are suggesting that, and they are in that poor middle class? And as quickly as you can, if you want to get out of the poor and middle class, you have to start doing what the rich do. And the rich do not buy term insurance. It's a waste of money.
So again, I'm saying the brightness of the future in this whole thing is that the hardest part about becoming wealthy was the financial literacy part. So cash flow was created for that because that makes it very easy. If you understand numbers very well, then real estate investing is a very safe, secure. It's just common sense. You know, if somebody says to me, I should buy this piece of real estate because the price is going to go up, I say, well, will you guarantee that? And they generally say no. In other words, if a piece of real estate doesn't put money in my pocket today, in other words, if it's not making me money today, I don't buy it because I can't shelter it necessarily if there's no income. I don't want to spend my – why would I waste my time paying for somebody else to live in my house? So it's just common sense. And so people say, well, how do you find a good deal? Well, that takes time. You know, and I look at probably 20 deals a week looking for the deal. There's an old saying, you kiss 1,000 frogs to find one prince, while you kiss a lot of real estate deals to find that one that works for you. And the thing, that's a tangible asset. Well, most people, because they don't have time, they buy intangibles, which are stocks, bonds, mutual funds, et cetera, because they don't have time. You know, there's a trade-off in here. So the good thing about it is the numbers have become easy via cash flow. If you need to start a business, network marketing, I recommend more than doing it my route, which was to start my own companies. Because starting my own companies, the risk is not the market that's at risk, it's what I don't know that's the risk. I mean, I've learned, I have scars across my back. My wife and I have been homeless for a few days. I mean, I have made so many tragic mistakes trying to build a system, a pipeline. A network marketing company is a pipeline, if it's a good company, is already established. All you have to do is learn their system, and pretty soon, you know, the cash comes in. And that's labor-intensive, not money-intensive. So if you don't have much money, then you've got to go labor-intensive. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, because you said earlier you either invest time or money, and in time you have to do both. But the critical thing with the network marketing or an insurance opportunity is that you have time, you can invest time, and you don't have a big capital requirement to get started. And then you begin to build a pipeline, as you said, and it's so important right then that you start that long-term vision, surround yourself with advisors that know what they're doing, and begin to start doing what the rich do.
Right. Remember my poor dad, you know, being a school teacher, he was very angry when some of his teachers or coaches would quit and go into insurance. He says, oh, you know, they're just doing it for the money and all that. And he thought that was stupid. Well, my rich dad thought it was a very smart move. He says, those guys who are doing insurance, they may work hard and not get paid much today, but each time they work, they build this base up and the residual income, which is key, isn't it, Diane? Residual income versus direct income?
Absolutely. The residual means that the money comes in whether you get out of bed that day or not.
You can play more tax avoidance strategies with it?
Absolutely. It also frees up your time for looking for more deals. Once you have your net, we call it, your basic expenses covered by passive income, that creates a tremendous freedom then.
And that free time is what allows people like me, because one of the reasons I wanted to get rich fairly quickly and have my pipelines come in place was to have more time to go look at more deals. And that's what I do. And that's why the rich get richer and the poor middle class haul water buckets and plan to be poor at age 65. That doesn't make any sense to me personally. But as Kim Butler says, it is a strategy more than the product. So more than just, you know, mutual funds and stocks, you know, a career or profession is an investment also. The question is, does it have long-term value or just short-term cash value? And that's the way you think. So the good news here is this. It is more possible than ever before, even though you're not a super athlete or movie star, to still become wealthy. You can start your own businesses very easily because network marketing companies cover that, or you can buy a franchise, which is kind of expensive, and you can start a career in insurance. Then what you do is you buy real estate. And the good thing about real estate is just like me, it's just dumb as dirt. I mean, it is just common sense. You know, if it doesn't make sense, don't buy it. If it doesn't make a profit, don't buy it. But that comes in the numbers, how you analyze one. It's just common sense. It's not a matter of what are the PEs, the Dow's doing this, what's this mutual fund guy doing. And it's none of that stuff. The derivatives markets, the options markets, the stock markets, the shorts, calls, puts, all that stuff. You don't have to do it. I'm as dumb as dirt. The cash comes in. I get capital appreciation. I don't have to pay taxes on for now. And I get tax write-offs. I'll get paper losses. They're not real losses, but I keep more of my money. So it's build businesses, acquire real estate, have the best advisors. And the reason I can't know it all, in the industrial age, you had to be smarter than everybody else. In the information age, you want to have people smarter than you around you. So that's why I have Kim and Diane around me, because they're more attuned to what they do better than I can. I sit there, I'm doing it this way. What do you think? And they'll give me their, it's up to me eventually. but I still seek the best advice I can. Most people ask their poor brother-in-law or their school teacher or their next-door neighbor, who is just as broke as they are, for financial advice. Or the reason they call them brokers, we at real estate, stock, mutual funds, whatever, the reason they call them brokers is because they're broke. And they're giving you advice about something they really don't have a strategy. They're trying to sell you a product, not tell you about a strategy. And the other part then is then you just look at corporate or legal entities, S corporations, C corporations, LLCs, and limited partnerships. Personally, because I own companies, I own C corporations, and I control C corporations. I also have C corporations and limited partnerships for my real estate. Now, if you don't know anything about that, well, neither do I. I hire the smartest attorneys and incorporators to do that for me. I don't have to know anything. I know three things: know my numbers, build my businesses, and buy real estate. As dumb as dirt. So I'm trying to say to all of you, it is not that hard. It's actually much easier than what the poor and middle class are doing. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's just taking one little step at a time and building on that and knowing that it isn't going to happen overnight and spending a little bit more time and talking to some more people and picking your plan carefully.
Your strategy.
And then having that strategy in place to implement it. Absolutely.
And to piggyback on Kim's comment, this idea of what your plan is, we've also talked about advisors, but, you know, your friends and relatives also play a role in that. And obviously, we're not saying never talk to your parents again because they'll have a different idea, but carefully look at the people you spend your time with.
And who influence your thinking.
Exactly. Right. And what do you spend your free time doing? Maybe that's the only time or resource you have available right now, but taking little baby steps in the right manner, instead of watching the game show, play cash flow.
It's like going to the gym. You know, you work out your brain for a while. So I want to thank the two of you for your time and your contribution to me personally. If I could review really quickly, that the rich, the poor, and middle class very simply have different financial strategies. Step two is that what the poor and middle class do, they focus on the product, either mutual funds, bonds, and all this, rather than the strategy. The strategy and where you want to go in your life is far more important than what you buy. I mean, I'm not making mutual funds or stocks wrong or right. You can get rich by doing those also. You can get rich by doing Beanie Babies, if you like. You can buy gold and still get there. It's not the product. It's the strategy overall. And number three, it's never been easier before in the history of the world, because before, most people couldn't buy their own businesses. And most people don't go to school to learn about numbers. And that's a hard subject. So, you know, cash flow and the game's made it quite easy for people. And number three, hang out with people who know more than you. You know, if an advisor says you can't do that, find an advisor who says you can do that, which comes to the point of all is I have mentors. I have advisors, I have mentors, and I have coaches who are around me. And I surround myself with people who have my best interests at heart, not people who are trying to hold me back. So if I could end, there's always a story of the tortoise and the hare. You know, the rabbit just ran out really quickly, but eventually the tortoise won. And the reason the tortoise won, as Diane was telling me, is that the keys to coming from poverty out into wealth, when there's a study all through the world, was they had a long-term vision. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
It's a slow and steady process.
Right. They knew exactly where they were going to go. They weren't planning to be poor. You know, I'm going to withdraw this money when I have less money. That doesn't make any sense to me. I want to have much more money at age 65 than I went at 55. And that's my plan. So they have a long-term vision. They delay gratification. And what most people do is they go for short-term pleasure and long-term pain. And I do it, you know, when I eat. I mean, I like to eat, but the pain is I get heavier long-term, so I've got to change that short-term thinking. But financially, a lot of people go, when they get frustrated, they go shopping or they buy something like, oh, a new dress, so I can feel better. So they feel better short-term, but they pain long-term on it financially. Well, I don't want to invest the time to study this stuff, so I just keep working harder. Well, that's short-term and long-term. And the third thing is compounding. And compounding is, you know, everybody talks about the power of compounding interest. Well, everything compounds. Your knowledge compounds, your good habits compound, as well as your bad habits. Is that true, Diane?
Yeah, I see that so many times that over my years as a CPA, I've had clients that start off and consistently are trying to learn about their business, constantly making it better and better. And those clients are multimillionaires today because they have taken the little baby steps. They've compounded that knowledge and learned from their mistakes as they went.
Yeah, I learn a little bit each day. I mean, Isn't that true? Every day things are changing. You learn every day you learn something new, right?
Absolutely. And what was right 10 years ago or for somebody else is not right today. And it's your own ability to just take and continue to pursue those steps. And sometimes you got to backtrack, but you got to have that long-term vision in place.
Right. So the most important thing is that the tortoise can beat the hare if necessary. A lot of times the hares play the lottery or they go to Vegas and they want to get rich quick. But in my experience, if the tortoise has the intention of just building pipelines, having the good advice, they can get there and they probably get there safer, stronger, and they pass it on for generations to come. And that's the way the game is played by the rich. They don't just buy a hot tip on a stock or take the advice of somebody that really doesn't know what they're doing. So there's a plan, and it's up to you. You can do it the rich, the poor, and the middle class way, and it's up to you. I've got one tip, okay? Is that there's three kinds of money. There's survival money, there's real money, and there's play money. So for the first years of my life, I was doing my best to just get enough money to survive on, and I was saving and investing to get real money. And real money goes into either blue chip stocks or real estate. For me, it's real estate simply because of the bank loans, the leverage, the tax advantages. So there's survival money, real money, and then there's play money. And it's the play money I speculate with. I like to play. I'm not into drudgery and hard work. I like the nice vacations. I like all those things. But now at the stage of my life, I can play with a lot of money. So I can invest in these high-flying stocks or the IPOs or the more things that people call risky. The reason is because it's play money. It's not real money or survival money. Unfortunately, what a lot of people are doing is they're trying to play with their survival money, or they're trying to play with their real money, and eventually they wind up broke. Most of them, I would say that. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and it's because their goals are not in line with what they're actually doing.
With their strategy, where they want to go to.
And that also illustrates very strongly the point of what's a good investment for you might not be a good investment for me.
That's correct.
It's not the product. It's where you are. What's your plan?
Very well said. Because a lot of times they say, what are you investing in today? Well, I'm building a gold mine in China and an oil company in Portugal and Colombia. Would you advise you investing? Heavens no. I mean, that is so speculative and so risky. But if I lost it all, it doesn't affect my survival money or my real money. And that's a very big difference out there. So I want to thank the two of you very much. I've enjoyed making this tape about what the difference between the rich, poor, middle-class invest in. So before we close, Diane Kennedy, any last-minute words?
You know, the thing that I see every day is that numbers are really the key to financial success. When you look at a financial statement, do you have the ability to tell the story that is behind that?
Is it a tragic ending or a happy ending, right?
Exactly. And if it looks like it's going in a tragic way, what does it take to change that? And I want to say that there's hope for everyone as long as you're willing to face it and work through it.
Very nice. Thank you. And Kim Butler, my financial planner. What do you have to say?
Well, again, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share with everybody the opportunities that are out there and to just say that you really have to keep the big picture in mind, be willing to take the baby steps along the way, and surround yourself with people that are supportive in your goals. If someone tells you no, turn elsewhere. It's out there and everybody can do it.
Thank you both very much. So in closing, I want to say this. My rich dad told me this years ago. There's only two things you can invest, time and money. And most people are working so hard carrying buckets, they don't have any time, so they just take their money and they say, here, take it. You know, you went to Harvard, you must know what you're doing. Oh, you have a PhD, you must know what you're doing. What my rich dad said to me is this. People who invest the time always get the money one way or the other from those who don't have time. So please invest in your education, because this is what this tape is about, and always seek the best competent advice, and invest the time before you invest the money. Thank you very much.
Because the subject of corporations plays such a critical part of Robert's investment strategy, it is often a very confusing subject. Robert has made available an additional tape called What My Rich Dad Taught Me About Corporations. This tape is part of the Cash Flow 202, which shows how the rich pay less taxes and protect their assets. For a copy of this tape, please send $10 to Cash Flow Technologies, 6611 North 64th Place, Paradise Valley, Arizona, 85253, or call 1-800-308-3585. If you would like to contact Diane Kennedy, CPA, call 602-252-1500. If you're an Arizona resident and would like to contact Kim Butler, CFP, call 602-957-7155. Thank you for listening to this tape.